Have you ever wondered what happens when good people make terrible choices for all the right reasons? M.L. Stedman's international bestseller, The Light Between Oceans, swept readers into this moral quagmire when it debuted in 2012, selling over 3 million copies worldwide and inspiring a major motion picture starring Michael Fassbender and Alicia Vikander. This haunting tale of isolation, love, and impossible choices resonated deeply with readers across 35 languages, earning Stedman multiple literary awards. What makes this Australian author's debut novel so captivating is how it places ordinary people in extraordinary circumstances, forcing us to ask ourselves, what would I do if faced with the same heartbreaking decision? As Oprah Winfrey noted when selecting it for her book club, it's not black and white, it's gray. And who among us has not made a decision that was gray? Tom Sherburne emerges from the Great War a damaged man, seeking solitude. The isolated lighthouse keeper position on Janus Rock, a remote island nearly 100 miles from the Australian mainland, offers exactly the escape he needs. Named for the two-faced Roman god who looks simultaneously to the past and future, Janus Rock sits at the point where two oceans meet, a fitting metaphor for Tom's existence. He's a man caught between his traumatic past and uncertain future, between duty and desire. The lighthouse itself becomes a character in this narrative, a slender white stone tower rising 130 feet into the sky, housing a magnificent First Order lens with its palace of prisms like a beehive made from glass. Tom finds purpose in its meticulous maintenance. The routine provides structure, extinguishing the light at dawn, hoisting the ensign on Sundays, recording weather patterns, and ensuring the giant lens rotates perfectly each night. For Tom, the lighthouse represents order in a chaotic world. He just has to keep the light burning, nothing more. The isolation of Janus Rock serves as both sanctuary and prison. When Tom stands on the gallery looking out at the vastness of ocean and sky, he experiences a profound moment where he had no edges, a stark contrast to the claustrophobic trenches of war. Yet this same isolation magnifies every emotion and decision. With only quarterly supply boat visits connecting them to civilization, Tom and later his wife Isabel exist in a world where their choices affect only themselves, or so they believe. This physical separation from society becomes the crucible for the moral dilemma at the heart of the story. When a boat washes ashore carrying a dead man and a living infant, the lighthouse's distance from civilization creates the perfect environment for ethical boundaries to blur. The mainland and its rules feel distant, while the crying baby's needs are immediate and real. In this remote setting, Tom and Isabel's faithful decision to keep the child as their own seems almost reasonable, a private choice on a private island. But as we discover, no island is truly isolated, and no choice without consequence. The Great War casts a long shadow over the narrative, having transformed both the characters and their community. Tom returns physically intact but emotionally scarred, carrying invisible wounds that manifest in nightmares and a desperate need for order. His military training makes him excel at lighthouse keeping, meticulous, disciplined, reliable, yet leaves him struggling to connect emotionally. When Isabel asks about his wartime experiences, he firmly refuses. Such horrors don't belong on this island, in this bed. For Tom, the contrast between the endless horizon of Janus Rock and the muddy yards men died fighting over during the war strikes him deeply. The lighthouse provides perspective that war lacked, a reminder that human conflicts are tiny against nature's vastness. Yet he cannot escape the memories of burying fallen comrades, which resurface painfully when he must bury the dead man from the dinghy. The small port town of Point Partageaux bears its own war wounds. Once believing that real things happened elsewhere, the town discovered it had something the world wanted: young, fit men. The telegrams that arrived instead of returning sons left the community as full of holes as a Swiss cheese. The lucky returnees often came back damaged, gassed, trembling, or missing limbs. By 1920, life had rewoven into a practical fabric with a granite obelisk listing the fallen. Isabel's family embodies this communal grief. Her brothers Hugh and Alfie died in the war through a tragic mix-up. Alfie died within a day of Hugh, but due to their consecutive service numbers and similar initials, the family initially received incorrect information. The grief transformed their household, Violet obsessively tidying her son's rooms while Bill withdrew into silence. Isabel felt she needed to be the consolation prize for her parents, causing no additional trouble. Against this backdrop of war's aftermath, Isabel's three miscarriages represent another kind of battlefield loss. Each failed pregnancy leaves her more desperate for a child, making the baby in the boat seem like divine intervention. When she tells Tom that Lucy has brought color to her previously colorblind world and opened corners of your heart that life had shut down, she's speaking not just of motherhood, but of healing from multiple traumas. The novel suggests that grief can distort moral compasses. Isabel's desperate desire for a child after multiple losses makes her willing to ignore the ethical implications of keeping Lucy. Similarly, the town's treatment of Frank Roenfelt, chasing him and his baby into the sea because he was German, stems from misplaced grief over war losses. In both cases, pain leads to actions with devastating consequences. At its core, The Light Between Oceans presents an impossible moral dilemma. What happens when doing what feels right requires doing something wrong? When Tom and Isabel discover the boat with the dead man and living infant, they face this question directly. Isabel, who has just suffered her third miscarriage, sees the baby as a gift from God, a replacement for the child she's lost. Tom, bound by duty and rules, knows they should report the incident immediately. The novel brilliantly illustrates how easily moral boundaries can blur. Isabel persuades Tom to wait until morning, then to keep the baby temporarily, and finally to claim her as their own. Each small step seems reasonable in isolation, especially when framed as kindness. I'm suggesting kindness, that's all. Love for a baby, that we accept this gift that's been sent to us. Tom's reluctant participation comes from love for Isabel and, eventually, for Lucy herself. Ralph's wisdom to Tom captures this ethical entanglement perfectly. Right and wrong can be like bloody snakes, so tangled up that you can't tell which is which until you've shot them both. The novel refuses simple judgments, showing how good people can make terrible choices for understandable reasons. Isabel isn't villainous for wanting to keep Lucy. She's a grieving mother who sees a chance for happiness. Tom isn't weak for going along. He's a loving husband trying to heal his wife's wounds. Yet the novel also shows that moral compromises exact a price. Tom's conscience torments him, especially after meeting Hannah and seeing her suffering. He cannot escape the knowledge that their happiness comes at another's expense. The blank space in the logbook for April 27th haunts him, a physical representation of the truth they've erased. Isabel initially seems less troubled, but her later breakdown reveals the psychological toll of living with their deception. The impossible choice extends to Hannah when she discovers the truth. Should she demand justice against the people who stole her child, even if it means traumatizing Grace? Should she offer Isabel a terrible bargain, testifying against Tom in exchange for keeping Grace? Her final decision to show mercy demonstrates that sometimes there are no perfect solutions, only less painful ones. What makes someone a mother? This question lies at the heart of the novel's most wrenching conflict. Isabel has nurtured Lucy from infancy, responding to her cries, teaching her words, and loving her unconditionally. Hannah gave birth to Grace and has spent years grieving her loss, never abandoning hope of finding her. Both women have legitimate claims to motherhood, making the situation heartbreakingly complex. The novel portrays motherhood as both biological and constructed. Isabel's body responds physically to Lucy's arrival. Her breasts, still producing milk after her stillbirth, allow her to nurse the baby immediately. This biological connection strengthens her belief that she was meant to mother this child. Yet Hannah's biological connection to Grace is undeniable, evident in the physical resemblances that eventually emerge as the child grows. Beyond biology, motherhood is depicted as a relationship built through daily care and emotional investment. Isabel knows Lucy's preferences, fears, and joys intimately. She understands that Lucy likes stories about animals, but not giants, that she needs her blanket to sleep, that she's afraid of thunder. When Lucy is returned to Hannah, this accumulated knowledge is lost, leaving the child disoriented and grieving. The novel also explores how motherhood shapes identity. Isabel defines herself primarily as Lucy's mother, feeling that the invisible thread of love connects them constantly. When Lucy is taken away, Isabel struggles to know who she is anymore. Similarly, Hannah has maintained her identity as Grace's mother throughout years of absence, refusing to relinquish that core aspect of herself despite everyone's advice to move on. Lucy/Grace's own identity becomes contested territory. Is she Lucy Sherburn, daughter of lighthouse keepers who loves the ocean and knows star names? Or is she Grace Ellen Roenfeldt, daughter of a German baker, heir to a timber fortune? The child herself rejects the identity change initially, insisting, "I'm not Grace, I'm Lucy." Her confusion highlights the cruelty of forcing a young child to abandon her established sense of self. The resolution suggests that identity isn't fixed but fluid. When Lucy Grace returns as an adult, she has integrated both aspects of her history, acknowledging both sets of parents informing who she has become. Her hyphenated name symbolizes this integration. She is both the child raised by Tom and Isabel and the daughter of Hannah and Frank. Isolation permeates the novel both physically and emotionally. Janice Rock stands nearly 100 miles from the Australian mainland with only quarterly supply boat visits. This physical remoteness creates the conditions for Tom and Isabel's fateful decision. Far from society's eyes, they can rewrite reality. Yet the novel demonstrates that no one is truly isolated. Connections persist despite distance. Tom's emotional isolation predates his lighthouse posting. His harsh childhood under a cold father left him with few emotional attachments, making army discipline easier and war losses more bearable. On Janice, he initially embraces solitude, finding peace in the palace of prisms atop the lighthouse and the vastness of ocean and sky. Isabel disrupts this isolation, bringing warmth, music, and eventually Lucy into his ordered world. Isabel experiences a different kind of isolation. Though naturally sociable, she willingly chooses the remote lighthouse life to be with Tom. After her miscarriages, she becomes emotionally isolated even from him, refusing to signal for help or tell anyone about her losses. When Lucy arrives, Isabel's isolation deepens as she becomes complicit in a secret that separates her from honest connection with others. Hannah suffers isolation within community. As a widow believed to have lost her child, she lives surrounded by people yet fundamentally alone in her grief. When Grace returns, Hannah faces a new isolation, unable to share her struggles with others who expect her to be simply joyful and grateful. The lighthouse itself symbolizes this paradox of isolation and connection. Its purpose is communication, warning ships of danger, guiding them safely, yet the keeper lives apart from those he protects. Similarly, Tom and Isabel's decision to keep Lucy isolates them through secrecy while creating a profound connection to the child. The novel suggests that complete isolation is both impossible and undesirable. Even on remote Janice Rock, the past intrudes through memories, letters arrive from the mainland, and eventually the truth about Lucy emerges. Human connections, whether family bonds, community ties, or moral obligations, cannot be escaped. True healing comes not through isolation, but through honest connection, as demonstrated in the novel's conclusion when Lucy, Grace, returns to reconnect with Tom. Forgiveness emerges as one of the novel's most powerful themes, offering characters a path through seemingly unresolvable conflicts. Frank Roenfeldt's wisdom, shared through Hannah's memory, provides the key. You only have to forgive once. To resent, you have to do it all day, every day. This insight eventually guides Hannah toward mercy rather than vengeance. Tom's journey toward redemption begins with his willingness to take responsibility. When the truth about Lucy emerges, he insists on shouldering all blame to protect Isabel. This self-sacrifice represents both atonement for his role in keeping Lucy and an act of love toward Isabel. His letter to Isabel reveals his perspective. "To have met you when I thought life was over and been loved by you, if I lived another 100 years, I couldn't ask for better than that." Tom accepts the consequences of his actions without bitterness. Isabel's path to redemption is more complicated. Initially, she refuses to acknowledge wrongdoing, insisting they've given Lucy a loving home. When Hannah offers her a terrible bargain, testifying against Tom in exchange for keeping Lucy, Isabel momentarily considers it before choosing loyalty to Tom over her desperate desire for Lucy. Her confession to Sergeant Nucky represents her first step toward taking responsibility, though her emotional breakdown afterward shows the devastating cost. Hannah's forgiveness proves most transformative. After initially wanting the Sherbornes severely punished, she speaks in their defense, resulting in reduced sentences. She explains to Tom that she didn't forgive them, but couldn't let them suffer further punishment. Her mercy stems not from forgetting their actions, but from recognizing that without Tom's intervention, her daughter would have died. Most importantly, she chose mercy because Frank would have been the first one to forgive you. The novel suggests that forgiveness doesn't erase the past, but offers a way to move forward without being consumed by it. Tom articulates this wisdom. "I've learned the hard way that to have any kind of a future, you've got to give up hope of ever changing your past." This hard-won insight allows the characters to find peace despite irreparable losses. Light and darkness weave through the novel as powerful, multifaceted symbols that operate on both literal and metaphorical levels. The lighthouse itself stands as the central symbol, representing illumination amid darkness, guidance, truth, and moral clarity in a world of ethical ambiguity. Tom's unwavering dedication to keeping the light burning, maintaining his 4-hour watches with military precision, reflects his fundamental decency despite his moral compromise regarding Lucy. The lighthouse beam that reaches beyond the horizon is like seeing into the future, as Isabel observes, suggesting how present actions cast long shadows into unseen distances, affecting lives far beyond our immediate view. The child herself embodies this complex light symbolism in multiple ways. Isabel names her Lucy, meaning light, seeing her as divine illumination after the darkness of multiple miscarriages and stillbirths. The name choice becomes particularly poignant when, later in the novel, we learn her original name was Grace, Divine Mercy. Together, these names capture the dual nature of the child as both blessing and burden, illumination and shadow, opportunity for both joy and redemption. Lucy/Grace becomes the embodiment of how a single source of light can cast both warmth and shadows. Darkness manifests throughout the novel as both physical reality and metaphorical truth. It represents concealment, suffering, and moral ambiguity. The blank space in the logbook for April 27th becomes a powerful symbol of the darkness of deception, the truth Tom and Isabel have hidden from the world and, in some ways, from themselves. Tom's recurring nightmares from his war experiences occur in darkness, while his lighthouse duties require him to work through the night, suggesting his role as someone who maintains light amid personal darkness. This duality in Tom's character, his commitment to truth and light while harboring a devastating secret, creates one of the novel's central tensions. Water serves as a complex symbol of both separation and connection throughout the narrative. The vast oceans dividing Janus Rock from the mainland create the physical and psychological isolation that enables Tom and Isabel's deception to take root and flourish. Yet water also connects. The boat that brings Lucy to them, the passages that eventually return her to Hannah, the tides that link distant shores. Water represents both danger, Frank and Grace's near drowning, and salvation, Lucy surviving the treacherous journey to Janus. The ocean's dual nature mirrors the character's own internal conflicts between duty and desire. The novel's title, The Light Between Oceans, masterfully captures this rich tapestry of symbolism. Janus Rock stands at the precise point where two oceans meet, with its lighthouse illuminating this division. This geographical reality becomes a powerful metaphor for the moral territory the characters must navigate, the space between right and wrong, truth and deception, love and duty. Like the lighthouse keeper maintaining his vigil, they must find their way through competing forces, attempting to maintain some form of moral light amid emotional and ethical darkness. The meeting of the oceans itself suggests the collision of opposing forces, desire versus duty, love versus truth, that drives the narrative's central conflicts. The novel's final chapter, set in 1950, examines the long-term consequences of choices made decades earlier. Tom and Isabel have settled in Hopetown, living quietly with occasional visits from Isabel's parents before they passed away. Neither ever returned to Partajus. The physical distance reflects their emotional separation from the community where their greatest joy and greatest pain occurred. Isabel's deathbed concern about God's forgiveness suggests she never fully reconciled with her actions regarding Lucy. Her instruction to Tom to look after the letter reveals she maintained some connection to the child they lost, even if only privately. Tom's vigil beside her body demonstrates his enduring love despite the fractures in their relationship. Lucy Grace's return as an adult with her own child represents both healing and continuity. Now understanding why Tom and Isabel did what they did, she has come to express gratitude rather than resentment. Her promise to return someday offers Tom hope for ongoing connection, though the novel leaves ambiguous whether this promise will be fulfilled. Tom's final reflections capture the novel's philosophy about accepting the consequences of one's choices. He knows that where he is now is all a matter of choices he has made, and he accepts that. Looking at the moon rising as the sun sets, he understands that every end begins something new. He knows that his story and Isabel's will eventually fade, but takes comfort that the light will always reappear. This acceptance doesn't erase regret, but incorporates it into a larger perspective. The lighthouse keeper, who once maintained a beam to guide others through darkness, has learned to navigate his own moral twilight. The novel suggests that peace comes not from undoing past choices, which is impossible, but from acknowledging them, accepting their consequences, and finding meaning in what remains. The Light Between Oceans ultimately explores how we navigate between competing goods, between love and duty, personal happiness and social responsibility, heart and conscience. No character emerges unscathed from these impossible choices, yet the novel resists simple judgments about right and wrong. Tom's military background taught him that rules stood between man and savagery, yet his love for Isabel and later Lucy leads him to compromise those principles. Isabel's maternal instincts drive her to claim Lucy as her own, seeing the situation through the lens of love rather than law. Hannah must choose between demanding justice and protecting her daughter from further trauma. Each character acts from authentic values, making their conflicts all the more wrenching. The novel suggests that in life's most difficult moments, there are no perfect solutions, only choices with different kinds of pain. As Ralph tells Tom, right and wrong can be like bloody snakes, so tangled up that you can't tell which is which until you've shot them both. This moral complexity makes the story deeply human rather than didactic. What remains after all the heartbreak is the transformative power of love. Despite everything, Tom never regrets loving Isabel and Lucy, even though that love led to his greatest suffering. Hannah's love for Grace ultimately leads her toward mercy rather than vengeance. Lucy, Grace's return to Tom, demonstrates that love can persist across decades and despite painful history. The lighthouse stands as the perfect metaphor for this navigation between competing values, a fixed point offering guidance amid shifting seas. Like Tom at his post, we must each maintain our own inner light while acknowledging that sometimes in the darkness, the best we can do is keep the beam turning, illuminating what we can, and accepting that some waters remain uncharted.